weather and climate often cause concern and curiosity, but understanding the facts behind the phenomena can be a challenge. We're here to help. From the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and Illinois Public Media, this is Weather Realness, a weekly podcast about the science behind weather and climate in Illinois. I'm your host, Maddie Stover, a doctoral student in physics here at the University of Illinois. Despite a rainy week in central Illinois, our state is still experiencing record levels of drought.
Now to a follow-up on how this drought is impacting a town in Moultrie County. We told you a month ago the city of Sullivan was asking people to voluntarily conserve water.
Now they're making it a...
Twin Cities Newsroom Now leaders with the city of Bloomington say the city is in a severe drought, so they're asking the community to begin conserving water. Thursday night, Bloomington City Manager issuing...
We had a drought late in the season, in the growing season in eastern Illinois, and Stu Ellis says the USDA now available to help farmers financially with that, as we turn now to From the Farm.
The period between August 2025 and January 2026 was a top 10 driest on record in most of central Illinois. Drought is also impacting areas of the U.S. that don't typically struggle with it. According to the U.S. Drought Monitor, as of February 24th, most of the state of Florida is in severe or extreme drought, while none of California is in drought. Trent Ford, the Illinois state climatologist, joins us to talk more about the current drought in Illinois and across the U.S. Thanks for joining us, Trent.
Yeah, thanks, Maddie.
So, Trent, we finally got some rain last night. We're recording this Wednesday, March 4th. Can you remind us why we're still in a drought aside from despite that thunderstorm we got last night?
Yeah, so it was the first rain we've had in a long time.
Here we go. Another round of rain coming up from the southwest. So we had that pocket earlier in the day today, shifted into Indiana. Another round with embedded thunderstorms. Yeah, one or two could have small hail. I think the main risk is severe weather misses central Illinois, downstate Illinois. That's where our latest watch is in effect. So again, another round of rain.
We got plenty of rain though. Here's some select rainfall reports since yesterday morning here. We had a pocket of 2 to 4 inches that swept right down US 36, Springfield, Decatur, Charleston, 1.84, Champaign, 1.5 in the center part of town here. Some spots got a little bit more. Savoy got a little more, in fact, than us here.
And like I was telling you off, you know, my son saw the lightning, heard the thunder. It's like, wow, was that lightning? When was the last time we had that? And it felt like months. So most of the east central part of Illinois picked up at least an inch of rain. Some got closer to 2 to 3 inches, a little bit farther south of Champaign. But that was great. We need more. And the reason we're still in drought is because, sort of as you mentioned, going all the way back to August, but even around the Champaign area further back last year, you know, we're looking at deficits of, you know, 15 to 20 inches below what we would normally tend to see over the last like 12 months or so. So 3 inches of rain is great, but it's sort of a drop in the bucket, so to speak, on what we actually need. And so we definitely cannot, beggars can't be choosers. We cannot, we want to be sure to celebrate the rain. And it looks like more is on its way, hopefully, but we definitely need more to really start to make progress on the drought conditions.
Mm-hmm. So what parts of Illinois are under sort of like a more serious mandatory water restriction?
Yeah, so right now what we have, if we're going by the U.S. Drought Monitor, which is one of the better sources of drought information across the U.S., what we see is most of east central Illinois, kind of Bloomington, Normal to Champaign-Urbana over to Decatur, is in extreme drought, which is D3. It's the second from the worst category. Most of central Illinois, all the way over to Quincy, down towards the St. Louis area, and even up now to La Salle, Peru area, and kind of north central Illinois is in severe drought, which is D2. And over 80% of the state is in some form of drought, moderate drought or worse, so it's D1. Actually, the only place in the state that's really not in drought right now is the Chicagoland area, because they've just gotten they haven't been wet, but they've gotten just enough precipitation. And so, you know, with that, those categories, we see that a lot of the water resource impacts so far of private wells going dry or mandatory water restrictions have mainly occurred in east central Illinois. So municipalities like Bloomington, Decatur, Sullivan, they've enacted mandatory water restrictions or water emergencies because of low levels in their reservoirs or groundwater.
And why are there, why don't we have any water restrictions here in Champaign-Urbana?
Yeah, it's interesting. So part of it, yeah, I mean, if you look at the deficits and where the drought is the worst, it's Champaign-Urbana. The reason that we're having impacts outside of Champaign-Urbana has more to do with how those water systems are set up. And this is one important part of drought, that a drought has an impact that's not just caused by the hazard itself, the weather, but caused by the human systems that we build and how vulnerable they are to drought. So cities like Decatur and Bloomington are on what we call surface water, which is lakes that are fed by certain types of streams. And they tend to be more flashy in the response to drought, meaning they can go into drought much more quickly. They can experience lower levels that hit those kind of triggers that force the city to enact these water restrictions. But when we get a lot of rain, they also recover a lot more quickly.
Is that because they're just shallower water reservoirs?
Shallower. And then when you think about when we get rain, what happens is that rain, when it hits the ground, simply it's either going to infiltrate the soil, and then over anything from days to years, or in some cases centuries, that water will work its way down in the soil all the way to maybe some aquifers and groundwater. Or a lot of that water doesn't infiltrate the soil, it actually runs off, which means that it's either going over the surface, and we see that, you know, in stormwater drainage in urban areas, or it's infiltrating the soil, but then it's moving into our lakes and our streams through the groundwater. In those situations, the path that water takes, I mentioned it could take decades to centuries for rain to get into the groundwater in the aquifers. It may only take a few hours for it to get into streams. And then those streams come up, they drain those large areas, and they fill up those reservoirs, which is why they can recover a lot more quickly. Champaign-Urbana is fed by the Mahomet Aquifer. Good news, bad news. Good news is that it takes a lot longer and more severe of a drought to start seeing the Mahomet levels go down to the point where residents in Champaign-Urbana could take notice. The bad news is that if we ever got to that point, it does take quite a long time to refill. We saw the Mahomet really respond to the 2012 drought, especially when irrigation pumps were turned on in Champaign County and elsewhere. What we really saw is that it took years of wetter weather after 2012 to really get us to where we were before that drought. We aren't there yet with this drought, mainly because it's been mostly a fall to winter kind of phenomenon. But certainly it's something that we'll want to improve the drought before we get into summer so that we don't see those kind of groundwater systems like the Mahomet really suffer.
And can you remind us what an aquifer is? Like, how deep into the ground is the Mahomet Aquifer?
Yeah, so the Mahomet Aquifer is thousands of feet deep. It is what we call a confined aquifer. So what an aquifer is just an area of basically below ground, an area of types of material like sands, gravels that are naturally occurring. Because those types of material are really porous, meaning they have a lot of space between the sand grains or between the gravel chunks, they can hold a lot of water. And so these are large, large. I mean, the Mahomet Aquifer stretches roughly from Hoopston over to Havana. You know, this is a huge part of East Central Illinois. And what they do is, because they can hold so much water, they fill up with water, and then it creates a huge reservoir, essentially an underground reservoir for water resources that are not as vulnerable to what's going on above ground, because we're talking thousands and thousands of feet below ground. So there's no evaporation from the Mahomet Aquifer like what we have of a lake. You know, that sort of thing isn't really much of an issue. But what the Mahomet Aquifer is for most of the Champaign County area and kind of that zone is more of a confined aquifer, meaning it's really, really deep. And there's layers of material that are above the aquifer that make it hard for water to get in. So that's why I'm talking about when we get rain here in Champaign County, if it does end up making its way in the Mahomet Aquifer, it's likely going to take a long time to do that, which is why when we do see the Mahomet go down, it really does take a while to come back up just from rainfall alone.
So kind of taking a step back, looking at this long-term drought that we have, what has been causing this kind of climate meteorological wise?
Yeah, it's been sort of an odd situation. So in the spring of 2025, it was extremely wet in South Central Illinois. We had the right setup for the larger atmospheric environment to bring us a lot of rain in spring. The problem was is that where the jet stream set up and most of the storms came through in the spring, it was south of the Champaign area. So kind of Interstate 70 and south of there. And then we had a sort of boring summer where there wasn't a strong flow across the mid part of the United States. This kind of big cell pattern that we call the Bermuda High was pushed way out in the Atlantic, so it wasn't steering a lot of Gulf moisture up into the Midwest. So what it made for was not a particularly hot summer, but one where we just didn't really get a whole lot of precipitation and storm chances. And that really intensified in the fall, partly due to La Nina conditions, which do tend to bring drier conditions in the fall. And so what we've done is really up into the winter stretched this period of time where we just were not lucky enough to catch much rain, and then kind of a drier regional pattern. And then for the winter, that really dry kind of not much active weather across much of the central U.S., it's just been kind of a dull time for weather. I mean, kind of like what we were talking about with how unusual it seemed to hear thunder and lightning, because it's been so long since we've seen that consistently. And so all of that really added up to this period of time of just really persistent dryness. A lack of any kind of really active weather has made for drought that set up.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Weather Realness, the weekly podcast about climate and weather. We are joined by Illinois State climatologist Trent Ford to talk about the current drought we are seeing in Illinois and other parts of the U.S. So Trent, you kind of mentioned that we might be getting some more storms this spring. How much rain do we need to end this drought, and do we expect to get it this spring?
Yeah, it's a good question. I get this a lot with questions like, how much rain do we need? Like, this number. It's almost never just an exact number. We need as much rain as we can get at this point. And then at some point I'll say, okay, stop. We don't want to go into flooding. In reality, between now here in early March and the end of May, so kind of the start of summer, we normally would expect to get between about 12 and 15 inches of rain. That's one of our wettest times of the year. If we had what would be considered typical for spring, that would really help us to at least, if not end the drought, which it probably wouldn't, but get us closer to where we would want to be with reducing, minimizing water resource impacts, agricultural impacts, that sort of thing. You know, this drought has taken 9 to 12 months to get into for most of the state. So getting out of it in a period of time that's shorter than that is really hard. You know, it takes a lot of times months to get out of a drought. So what we're really looking at here is a wetter spring, hopefully a wetter summer that can really start to refill some of those, the dry soils, start to refill the reservoirs, the streams, get us to where we want to be coming into fall. One thing that's been on our side so far is the timing of this drought. It really intensified in the fall and going into winter, which is the time that we use the least amount of water, humans and ecosystems and plants. But once that summer gets going, the plants break dormancy or they're planted, humans start to use more water, and the atmosphere starts to demand more water because it's warmer. And so all of those things make drought intensify and accelerate much more quickly. So if we can make headway on the drought now, it makes it much less likely that we run into big problems come summer.
And do the models project that we're going to get that typical 12 to 15 inches this now through May?
Yeah, I mean, everything that we see from the next 2 weeks to the whole 3-month period between March and May is showing above average precipitation, best chances. So, I mean, there's not a lot of evidence that we're going to necessarily have a really, really dry spring other than persistence. Anybody who studied droughts understands that drought is persistent. It's a kind of a day-to-day slog of just not getting enough rain here and there. So the fact that we saw over the last week this heavier time of wetter conditions here coming for a while in the forecast, and it actually came to fruition, and now we're looking forward 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and it still shows wetter conditions, gives me a little confidence that we can really start to build some some improvement here.
Some momentum.
Yeah.
So kind of looking ahead at the growing season, as you're talking about, do farmers need to be worried or maybe make adjustments, or are things maybe going to be a little more typical given this spring rain that we expect?
Yeah, it's. I mean, when you say like farmers need to worry, they're on top of it. All the farmers in the region know how dry it's been, and you know, they're the ones reporting that, hey, I dug down and it's bone dry in the soil, 5-6 feet deep or whatever it may be, or that their wells have run dry, their stock ponds have run dry, whatever that may be. So some of the impacts, you know, when it comes to commodity crops like corn and soybeans, those really depend on rainfall in the summer. Being planted in very, very dry soils can have the benefit of encouraging strong root growth. But we still need the rain in the summer to make those crops. So I'm less concerned about impacts there unless we really drag drought into the summer. Some of the other types of perennial crops we have, tree fruit, other types of perennial crops, berries, vineyards, they definitely do have problems related to drought. But a lot of those crops are irrigated. Irrigation is good. It provides resilience to our food systems, especially the crops that we eat. But the problem is that when those groups tend to irrigate, it tends to be dry when we need to use the least amount of water. So it can exacerbate an ongoing water resource problem. So it'd be good to just avoid that altogether. One of the biggest impacts that we would likely see if we stayed in a dry pattern through spring is pasture. You know, spring into summer is when we see a lot of our grazed animals, cattle, sheep, goats tend to go out to pasture. We're blessed here in Illinois with an abundant rainfall that can make for some really good pasture conditions, so we don't have to feed hay all the time. That makes it a lot easier for those livestock producers to get a good production from their animals when you have those good pasture conditions.
So this drought is also happening nationwide, lots of other places in the U.S.
The snow situation here in the West, I've never seen anything like it. We're in the midst of a snow drought, the likes of which could be record-breaking. It's not just a matter of...
This morning's rain doing very little to quell drought conditions throughout South Florida. Parts of South Florida still under water shortage warnings, and the forecast does not look all that promising.
According to the U.S. Drought Monitor, much of the West and Southwest are in severe drought, with, you know, some examples being very low snowpack levels in Colorado. What will it take for areas, you know, in the West and Southwest, like Colorado, to recover from drought?
Yeah, and you know, this really is a great question to highlight how different water systems are in different parts of the country. So in a lot of parts of Colorado, especially kind of the central and western parts of the state that are more mountainous, what those water systems really are built, so water resources for drinking and for municipal water use and for people's water use, recreation, as well as agriculture, because a lot of the agriculture out there is irrigated, all depends on reservoirs, like big bodies of water. I mean, folks have maybe ventured out to Lakes Powell and Mead. Those are the most famous reservoirs out in the West, but we have a lot of those strewn across the Colorado Basin. And those reservoirs are primarily fed by water that is coming from snowmelt in the spring and summer. So the ideal situation in the Rockies is you get a bunch of plentiful snow during the winter, when is their wet period of time. That not only allows people to ski, and so those areas get a lot of money from tourism, but that snow slowly melts throughout the spring and summer. That snowmelt runs off into the streams and then fills up the reservoir. So it provides this plentiful water supply, ideally, during what is normally a very dry period of time in the summer and the fall in that area. The problem is that when you depend on that snowfall for your entire year's water, when you don't have much snowfall, not only are you losing money for the ski season, but also it makes it so that you're not going to get that runoff. And so that's what Colorado really needs, is in a very, very snowy end to the snow season. Now, climatologically, March especially, but even into April, tends to be the snowiest seasons for, or snowiest months for, parts of Colorado, especially that wet, heavy snow that may not be so great to ski on, but makes great recharge for reservoirs. So not all hope is lost, but certainly when we take a look at the watersheds right now in Colorado, and some of those areas are, you know, 30 30, 40, 50% of what we normally expect for their snowpack. It is really concerning. So hopefully we see that as our fortunes may be changing for wetter conditions, we see the same thing in the West as well.
Yeah. And so with so much of the nation experiencing drought, can we expect to see, you know, big ag impacts and then kind of downstream effect of that, changes in prices at the grocery store for like staple crops or, mm-hmm. or things like meat?
Yeah, I think meat would probably be the biggest impact so far. So right now, beef prices are already through the roof, and that's because years of drought and poor grazing conditions have forced producers all across the country, but especially in the Great Plains and the West, to reduce their herd size. So just a supply and demand issue of just not enough meat, beef supply. So, of course, if we see, I mentioned the snow melt in Colorado and Utah and Arizona feeding those streams and reservoirs that are then used to irrigate, a lot of that irrigation is for alfalfa and other types of crops that are used to feed animals like cows. So without that water, again, we would likely continue to see the reduction in herd size, which would hurt the which would end up increasing beef prices. So that could be something that we continue to see if we do have drought, especially in that western U.S. region. For vegetables, it's a little bit more distributed. And, you know, one of the biggest fruit and vegetable producing area of the country is in California, which is, of course, itself very, very drought prone. But this year has had a very good winter season. A lot of the Central Valley, where that produces much of the nation's vegetable and fruit, also get fed by snowmelt. But the Sierras there that feed that, unlike the Rockies, have gotten a lot of snowpack. So they're doing okay. So I wouldn't expect to see too much problems with fruits and vegetables. But certainly I think meat, especially beef, could see those high prices continue for a lot of this year if we see drought continue as well.
Mm-hmm. And then just to end on a quick question that actually I had yesterday during a rare thunderstorm here, is it safe to like shower during a lightning storm?
Yes. Yeah, it's funny too that I used to think this when I was a kid, and I don't know if it's because my dad told me this or something.
My parents would tell me this growing up. They'd
okay,
be like,
okay.
You guys can't hop in the shower.
Yeah, okay, exactly. Exactly. I have no idea where to get. As if lightning would hit the water treatment plant and then run through the pipes and shock us through. No, it's perfectly fine.
Okay.
If your shower is outside, no. Like, you know, okay, so for those of you who have outdoor showers, don't use them in a thunderstorm, but...
Or maybe in winter at all.
Yeah, that's a good point. It is winter. That's probably a more important point. But for those of you who are more traditional indoor showers, perfectly fine to use them in a thunder or lightning storm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, thank you for joining us, Trent.
Yeah, thanks, Maddie. It's always a great time to join you all.
Trent Ford is a state climatologist with the Prairie Research Institute. For those just tuning in, you're listening to Weather Realness, the podcast about weather and climate. I'm Maddie Stover. Have a weather or climate question you want us to tackle? Leave us a voicemail at 217-333-2141 or email weatherrealness@illinois.edu. Coming up next, we're talking about Bad Bunny's Super Bowl performance and its connection to weather and climate.